Walmart Plus. It's Walmart Plus free delivery, which saves members time plus money. Yep. Plus an included Paramount Plus subscription to stream movies, shows, sports, and that can't miss documentary. Plus Burger King savings. That's right. Members get 25% off Burger King digital orders every day of the week. Walmart Plus. It's Walmart Plus. Become a member at walmartplus.com. $35 order minimum. Paramount Plus Essential plan only. Separate registration required. Valid at participating U.S. BKs in the BK app or bk.com for members only. 25% off one time per calendar day. Terms apply. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, it's appropriate that I'm joined now by David McWilliams because he's been writing a bestseller which is called Money, A Story of Humanity. Doesn't mention the cash machine. Anyway, David, good morning.
Pat, how are you? I should have mentioned the cash machine. Should have mentioned it clearly. How are you?
I'm very well. You've got rave reviews for this book, the Observer Book of the Year 24, Economist Book of the Year 2024, Financial Times Economics Book of the Year 2024, Prospect Book of the Year 2024. And it's all about something that fascinates most people, and that is money.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Pat. It is a book that I suppose I spent about two decades thinking about and never actually writing. And the essential part of the book is to figure out, and you will know this because you and I have been talking over the years, that it struck me during the pandemic that my career was largely based around looking at the relationship between humans and this rather bizarre thing called money. So I decided to actually try and figure out what is money, what it does to us, where it started, when it started, why did it start where it did, and trying to imagine the world right now without money is almost inconceivable. So the book is basically, Pat, it goes from the Stone Age to Bitcoin, and it traces the history of money and the relationship between money and humanity, and it looks at human history through the prism of this substance, which I kind of conclude is a wonderful and amazing technology more than anything else.
Now, so we can understand technology and Bitcoin, and we'll come to that in a moment or two, but you know, time was when you had a gold coin, it was based on this wonderful precious metal that didn't tarnish, that didn't rust, that didn't fade away in time, and was rare enough so it could be given a value. People wanted it and they could make jewellery out of it or they could spend it. So a gold coin had an inherent value. A pound note or a euro note is just a piece of paper.
Well, this is the fascinating thing, is that we have gone from... There's been many iterations of money. So, for example, the original money back in the Sumerian times, despite the fact that it was many, many years ago, was called a drachma, which was the ancient Greek, for a bushel of corn. So there's always been a standard. What does money mean, etc.? And since 1972, Pat, we have gone from having this standard, i.e., as you said, a piece of gold or a piece of copper or whatever it happens to be, which gave people real tangible value, to what we call fiat money, which is backed only by the promise of a government. Now, the extraordinary thing is that fiat money has been the, or at least coincident with, the most successful time in human economic history.
So what you're saying is a 50-euro note is worth 50 euros of purchasing power only because we say it is.
Precisely. So money is one of the great feats of human imagination, because it's not real. It's a total concept of the human imagination. Now, what makes our money real, for example, the euro, is that our governments in euro stipulate that this is the only currency in which you can pay your taxes. And that gives it institutional power. It's exactly the same as the dollar. So once a country decides that a currency is the mechanism through which you can pay taxes, it solders the currency and the money onto the state. And one of the arguments in the book is that money has always been a state-based idea, that ultimately it is far too powerful a mechanism or a power for the state to give away. So in the same way as, you know, the Gardaí are the only guards who can patrol on the street, the Irish Army is the only army, the euro is the only currency you can use legally as legal tender in this country. And that, I suppose, for most people, gives money a solidity. That money and the state are soldered together.
Yeah. But in terms of finance and the movement of money, which is done electronically, digitally, you say that central banks are nominally in charge, but they may only be in control of 10% of the money that's moving around. 90% is beyond the control of central banks.
Absolutely. So, Pat, I started my career in the central bank in Dame Street. And it was there I began to question whether or not the people who ran this show actually understood money, which was a very unusual revelation for a young economist to have. I thought, hold on a second. And again, if your listeners are thinking about money, look, imagine, for example, Pat, you're going to buy a new car tomorrow. You go to the bank and you say, I'd like, let's say whatever the loan is, it's, let's say 20 grand, 25 grand. And you go to the bank to, and they basically look at your salary and they look at your payments and a variety of other things. They say, okay, Pat's good for the money. Now, at that moment, money is created and put into your account and then you pay the car dealer tomorrow. That money didn't exist yesterday. The bank, the commercial bank, doesn't phone up the central bank and ask permission to create the money. The commercial bank creates money in Ireland and all over the world under license from the central bank. And that's what we called credit. And credit is the 90% of money. And credit isn't money in your back pocket, isn't actually even money in your account. It's a series of contracts and obligations which are basically underpinned by law. So when you, Pat Kenny, goes to buy a car, the money that is created to buy that car didn't exist yesterday. It is actually, in a way, magicked up by the commercial banks. And this is why we tend to have these periodic crises, because the central bankers, who pretend they are in control, Pat, aren't in control at all.
Moving on to crypto. I mean, I don't profess to understand cryptocurrency, except it's a string of numbers which have been somehow mined out of nothing. And there are a number of cryptocurrencies. So are people just using a huge amount of computing power to create something out of nothing?
Well, Pat, one of the arguments in the book is that money, one of the weird and counterintuitive things about money is that it's given value by the fact that it's used. So the reason the dollar is valuable isn't the piece of paper. It's actually the fact that the whole world accepts it. So in a way, money is a wee bit like a language. The more a language is used, the more useful it becomes. Now think about the likes of crypto. Crypto is fascinating for people who use it, as is Bitcoin. But for the vast, vast, vast majority of humanity, nobody cares. So I regard Bitcoin a bit like the Esperanto of money. For those who use it, it is fascinating. But for those who don't use it, it's like, I don't know, I'm not that pushed by it. And again, we get to the basic idea. One of the dilemmas with Bitcoin is at the moment it's been hoarded. And one of the problems with money is the minute you begin to hoard money, it becomes useless. It just becomes a speculative asset. So I think cryptocurrency and Bitcoin is something, but it's not money. And by that I mean it doesn't qualify for money in any definition of money that I understand. But what I do understand it is it's a digital asset that's going up and people are getting excited by it. And the more it goes up, the more excited we become. And then people have FOMO and they want to get in, this fear of missing out. So I think what we're looking at is an episode of speculation rather than a new iteration in what money is. That's not to say that crypto won't be used at some stage. But right now, it looks to me that the bias is more towards speculation than actual usage of this currency. Because again, what problem is it trying to solve, Pat? I mean, you're an engineer. You know that most technologies are there to solve a problem. It seems to me that crypto is trying to solve a problem that doesn't really exist.
Now, apropos of an earlier conversation with the Israeli ambassador and other conversations we've been having about the wars around the world, be it Ukraine or be it in Gaza or Lebanon or whatever, is the role that money plays in all of this. I mean, we are told that these wars can be about ethnic antipathies, or they can be ancient hatreds or whatever they might be. They can be religious divisions. But you would contend that most of them are about money.
Well, it's interesting. What I was very perplexed was about ISIS. When ISIS was declaring America the great Satan and the worst thing that ever happened to the world, yet they demanded the ransoms in dollars. Now, that's bizarre for me, right? And this shows you that money is this universal language. I don't think it's exclusively about money, but I think that it's about power. And where there is power, there is money. So I think, for example, we used to think consistently that any war in the Middle East was about oil. It has proved not necessarily to be the case. That's not exclusively about oil. But what it is, it's about ethnicity, it's about land, it's about power, it's about subjugation. And ultimately, as we've seen, the country with the biggest financial firepower, which in the region happens also to be the country with the biggest army, or at least the most potent army, which is Israel, seems to be winning. And that's definitely the case.
Hmm. Now, you've been podcasting about Syria. What do you make of the future of Syria? And does money play into this, resources and so on, that will enable them to establish a stable country?
Well, I mean, Syria has a very, very large oil reserve, which is in the Kurdish part of Syria, which, if you're looking at the map, is in the northwestern part of Syria. So clearly, you know, a country cannot survive without money. A regime needs money. But what is clear to me is that the two big losers in the region are obviously Russia and Iran. And the two big winners now as a result of Syria are Turkey and Israel. And of course, what will happen is that Syria will probably become a bit like Iraq, which is going to be this geopolitical cauldron in the middle. But again, the people with the biggest firepower financially will tend, obviously, to sit at the top table. And the interesting thing about this axis of resistance, remember the one with Iran and with Hezbollah and Hamas and Syria, is that that now has been beaten by a different axis, which is the Turks in the north and the Israelis in the south. And it remains to be seen whether or not Syria can emerge as a country. But one thing we know it can't emerge as a country is without finance.
Well, we will look at Syria as probably the story, along with Trump, of 2025. But for the moment, David McWilliams, economist and author of Money, The Story of Humanity. David, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.